Ananda Brindavan Champu, Chapter 17. The Rasa Dance Begins. After breaking the pride of all the devatas headed by Brahma, Krishna conquered the god of love. Seeing the beautiful full moon night of the Sharad season, Krishna desired to enjoy the Rasa Dance. In this transcendental pastime, Krishna tested the enchanting power of his coveted companion, the flute, embraced all the young gopis in his arms, and relished the pure love of the Brajakumaris who had previously worshipped Kachiyani without deviation. By this time, the Brajakumaris' attraction to Krishna flowed like a rushing stream of nectar. The fruit of their prema had been maturing from the day that Krishna accepted them. Understanding that their prema had ripened, Krishna thought, "Tonight I will enjoy Rasalila with my dearest Radhika, the gopis, and all of these young girls." To facilitate his pastime, he lengthened the night to equal the duration of Brahma's night. He strengthened the determination of the young girls who had been kept in their parents' homes on previous nights. On that night, the young girls, being maddened with a desire to please Krishna, easily overcame all obstacles and took shelter of the forest. Those effulgent, well-behaved young gopis, whom he had already accepted, quickly ran to the forest. Seeing them standing before him like the presiding deities of the full moon night, eager to satisfy his desires, Krishna said, "You have come here with great endeavor." After saying this, Krishna thought how to keep his promise to them. Knowing their intentions and Krishna's desire to enjoy intimate pastimes with them, Yogamaya, the Lord's own internal potency, made all necessary arrangements. The nights in which Krishna enjoyed his Rasalila surpassed the splendor of the spring, summer, and autumn seasons combined. The best flowers of those three seasons simultaneously bloomed and inundated the forest with incomparable aromas. The pleasing, indistinct sounds of cuckoos vibrated in all directions. The south wind blew gently, carrying the fragrance of honey-laden madhavi blossoms. Swarms of intoxicated young bees moved among the mallika creepers, drinking the nectar from the half-open blossoms. Their loud buzzing resembled the trumpeting conch shell of the spring festival. Lazy herons and love-crazed ducks swam about in the various lakes. Bees played in the blooming clumps of lotus flowers. The bright full moon rose quickly and moved into position for his service. Rising in the pink sky, it looked like the round dye tub for Cupid to color the cloth of the hearts of young men and women. It looked like a golden earring reflected on the passion-flushed cheeks of the goddess of fortune. The rising moon appeared like a copper clock in the sky, announcing the time for relishing the sweet Rasa dance. The moon appeared like the blissful face of the wife of Indra, the lord of the eastern direction. As the moon, anxious to see Krishna, continued rising, it turned yellow in color like fresh sprouts. Millions of stars twinkled attractively in the clear autumn sky. The moon appeared like a swan dyed yellow from touching the pollen of the golden lotus flowers growing in the lakes of the eastern direction. It appeared like an offering of butter churned from the ocean of yogurt by the embodiment of time. As the moon continued its upward journey, it turned more and more white in color. It looked like a white pavilion of the King of Seasons supported by the ropes of its fine rays. Just as lovers burning in separation often look through half-closed eyes, similarly, at this time, due to its brilliant rays, one could only view the moon through squinting eyes. The full moon looked like a plump white dove sitting in his nest of the sky fixed in the pavilion of the universe. The moon in its spots looked like a crystal box with reflections of betel nuts on it. But if you say that a crystal box does not move, Then we say that the moon appears like a sparkling silver boat crossing the ocean of the sky under the direction of the captain of time. If you say that the spots on the moon make it inauspicious, then we say that it is still beautiful and auspicious. It is just like a silver pot decorated with ornamental leaves belonging to the bride of the night. The moon glitters like the diamond earring of the playful Lord Balaram. It is like an egg produced by the swan of fame of the autumn season. The moon is like a cool, soft pillow to relieve Cupid's fever caused by his own pride. It is like a mulati mala tied in the hair of the spotless effulgence of the goddess of twilight. This indicates that chaste women worship the moon. Against the dark blue sky, the white moon appears like the Pankajanya conchel hanging on the darkened body of Vishnu. It is the silver umbrella of Cupid. Materialists are satisfied with the successful harvest produced by its nourishing rays. It looks like a splendid crystal bowl holding ghee for a yajna. The moon, situated in the milky ocean of the sky, is like an oyster shell box filled with priceless pearls. It is the looking glass of the goddess of auspiciousness. The Chandana Tilak on the maiden of the night, or a city of camphor to soothe the eyes. The beautiful full moon appears like a huge white lotus floating in a lake of bliss, a pile of foam on the ocean of sweetness, or the palace of the goddess of beauty. The full moon looks like a sandy bank of the Akash Ganga. Just as love-intoxicated cuckoos are always ornamented with sweet cooing, the moon is decorated with 15 attractive phases. Just as a pious king is endowed with treasures collected from his circle of followers, the moon possesses an orb of radiance. Just as Ram always accompanies Lakshman, and the Sarasa bird always stays with his wife, similarly, the moon always exists with its spots. Just as a devotee removes misery and gives joy to the earth, the moon relieves suffering and gives happiness. Just as a sadhu's good instructions act as medicine to cure a person's faulty intelligence, similarly, the moon gives herbs and plants as medicines to cure all diseases. Just as Kamadev stimulates desires, the moon increases mutual attraction. As a man of discrimination destroys the darkness of ignorance, the moonlight removes the darkness from the earth. As Sugriva is the master of his wife named Tara, similarly, the moon is the lord of the stars, Tara. Though the moon is always filled with sharks and snakes, Sada Ahi Makara, the moon is always full of cooling rays, Sada Hema Kara. In this way, the moon, replete with all good qualities and auspiciousness, illuminated Vrindavan with its rays of light. In the splendid Sharad season, the king of the stars gradually rose to the top of the sky. The moonlight filtering through the leaves and creepers created a wonderful combination of shading and lighting. The moon rays seemed to be coming through a sieve and spreading in a thousand pencil rays across the forest floor. Acting as a skillful light designer, the moon produced a perfect atmosphere for the auspicious rasa dance. The moon hung from the umbrella of the sky, which was embellished with the pearl-like stars. The effulgent rays of the moon seemed like the filaments of a huge chamara belonging to the demigods. The moon resembled a white lotus flower strung on a white silk thread through the center of an umbrella of pearls formed by the stars in the sky. Eager to enliven the earth, the moon emanated a unique radiance, which soothed and satisfied the minds of the people and churned the hearts of all beautiful ladies. The intoxicating nectar of the full moon maddened the world with desire. Encouraged by the splendor of the full moon, Krishna took shelter of his effulgent, all-enchanting flute. Endowed with matchless fame, Krishna's flute pleases the minds of everyone and forcibly attracts the young gopis of Vrindavan. Without making any distinctions, that flute enthuses everyone in heaven and earth. Though Krishna's flute has the power to attract all living entities, by the will of the Lord, only certain ones such as the deer, cows, birds, and young gopis can hear it. Seeing the rising moon, Krishna vibrated captivating tunes on his sweet murali. Hearing it, each gopi thought that Krishna called her alone. As they absorbed themselves in the blissful vibration, the gopis became oblivious to all their sounds. Manifesting its own personality, the flute sound transcended all obstacles and impediments in order to bring supreme fortune to the gopis. The flute's sweet song uprooted the gopis' hearts, drank up their intelligence, liquidated their self-control, and blurred their vision. Their minds entered a state of insanity, and their bodies shook in ecstasy. They thought only of the path leading to Krishna. The flute sounded a death blow to proper conduct and family reputation. It was the Agama Shastra for destroying one's patience and self-control. It cast an unbreakable spell upon the Brajagopis, suffering intense pains of lust from hearing the seductive calling of Krishna's murali. The gopis desired only to meet Krishna. Though soft and sweet, the sound of the flute acted like a mad elephant intent on enjoying his pastimes. Showing great skill, he broke through the fences of their families, destroyed their self-restraint, and turned the innocent young girls into wanton ladies. The flute sound created extraordinary effects when it touched the ears of that super-excellent gopi Radhika. It turned her into an intoxicated person. Becoming dizzy, Radharani lost all shyness and self-control. Her intelligence bewildered, she uttered nonsense words. This state of intoxication differed from the type caused by wine, which reddens the eyes. Radhika's eyes did not turn red from the intoxicating sound of the flute, but they filled with tears instead. But will the eyes not become red from wiping away the tears of love? The sound of Krishna's flute is the joy of all joys, the secret of all secrets, the festival of all festivals, and the impeller of all impellers to force one to meet with him. Upon hearing their own names blended in the melody of Krishna's flute, the Brajakumaris, though far away from Krishna, felt very close to their object of love. Although they had no prior arrangement for a rendezvous, and though engaged in their daily chores, all the gopis at once decided to go to Krishna. Immediately upon hearing the dancing notes of the flute, the gopis left the village of Vrindavan. They moved as if under the influence of a malefic star, or like puppets strung on a single thread, or rain falling from a cloudless sky. Their irrepressible prema flashed like lightning within them. The unexpected appearance of their cherished object of love baffled their intelligence. The gopis resembled golden creepers that had been broken and thrown into a lake of intense attraction. They looked like land lotuses crushed by the intoxicating elephants of their desires. Verily, they existed as the embodiments of loving hankering. Due to their acute longing for Krishna, the gopis lost all fear of criticism. The young girls looked immensely beautiful with their earrings swinging as they moved hastily along the path. They totally concentrated on the object of their desire. Pursuing the sound of the flute, they appeared like golden lights shaking in the wind or flames spreading light in all directions. The Sadhana Siddha gopis, Shrutichaaris and Municharis, were one group among the many famous Brajagopis attending the Rasa dance. These gopis happily spent their days obeying their parents and performing their daily duties. But upon hearing Krishna's flute song, they immediately abandoned their engagements of cooking, milking cows, fetching water, and so on. That alluring sound made them fly in the sky on the wings of their anxious hearts. Some gopis left rice boiling on the stove and quickly went to Krishna. Others abruptly left the circle of their relatives and ran out to the forest path. Some lotus-eyed gopis who were feeding milk to the babies of the married gopis put them on the ground and raced away. The Munichari gopis, who had been the sages of Dandakaranya, maintained Parakya Bhava for Krishna within the core of their hearts. Although carefully attending their husbands, they left them immediately upon hearing the sweet melody of Krishna's flute. They felt each moment away from Krishna to be like millions of years. Some of the Munichari gopis were taking their evening meals and joking with their families. But upon hearing Krishna's flute song, they instantly stopped eating and rushed off to Krishna. When beckoned by the murali, the Shrutichari gopis, although having painted sandal pulp designs on only one of their breasts, fled rapidly from their houses. Forcibly attracted by the vibration of Krishna's flute, the older Shrutichari gopis left the massaging of their maidservants aside and hastened to the forest without even buttoning their blouses. If the sadhana siddha gopis felt such affliction, one can just imagine the condition of the eternal consorts of Krishna. The nitya siddha gopis possessed totally auspicious eternal spiritual bodies. Permeated with joy, all their limbs longed for the sweet festival of Krishna's loving embrace. In their anxiety to meet Krishna, they dressed and ornamented themselves in haphazard ways. They fastened their necklaces on their waists, diamond belts on their chests, anklets on their arms, and bracelets on their ankles. They set their hip ornaments in their hair, and their hair ornaments on their hips. Losing all sense of reality, the gopis applied kajal to only one eye, alta to one foot, and kumkum to one breast. In this condition, their bodies looked even more attractive and clearly indicated their heart's burning desire for Krishna. Some gopis draped their upper garments around their legs and their undergarments on their arms. It appeared their limbs behaved as two close friends exchanging clothes with each other. They tied their sashes around their ankles. As they walked, the tassels on the ends of these sashes slid along the ground. The gopis looked like freed elephants dragging their chains behind them. Some gopis held their untied sashes in their lotus bud hands as they ran excitedly down the footpath to meet Krishna. An excited gopi who had applied wet lac dye to only one foot stained one side of the path as she raced down the path to Krishna. The young gopis appeared as beautiful as Parvati, the daughter of the Himalayas. With their veils flapping in the pleasant breeze, the gorgeous bodies of the gopis seemed like moving flags of Cupid, advertising their willingness to submit to Krishna. The tinkling of anklets tied on one foot appeared to be talking to a mute, since their constant clatter met no response from the other foot. Their armlets, haphazardly placed only on one arm, made their arms look more beautiful and auspicious. Even a branch from a celestial tree could not compare with the loveliness of their limbs. Though the sound of Krishna's flute entered both ears, some of the gopis hung earrings on only one ear. They could not be blamed for this mistake caused by the flute. After infatuating their hearts, the flute song goaded them quickly on the path to their beloved. Shot by the arrow of Cupid, their minds reeled in agitation and their throats choked from the rapid expulsion of their life airs. Swelling with expectancy and desire, the gopis hastily left their homes. They looked like prisoners released from a life sentence as they happily hurried into the forest. Darting here and there, the restless glances of the gopis looked like a shower of blue lotus petals initiating the festival of meeting Krishna. Although desirous, some groups of gopis could not meet Krishna. The husbands of the married Rishichari gopis prevented them from leaving the village. The Shrutichari gopis, previously the personified Upanishads, were kept home by their fathers, brothers, and friends. Posing as well-wishers, these relatives acted as their greatest enemies. Some of these gopis, however, who burned with attraction for Govinda, could not be stopped by anyone. Of course, no one could stop the all-worshipable Nitya Siddha gopis who forever display the highest degree of ecstatic love, Mahabhava. There are two types of love seen in the Rishichari gopis. Those gopis who had attained perfection in their love for Krishna after intense practice encountered no impediments in meeting the Lord. Other gopis who had not quite perfected their love for Krishna could not get out of their houses. Even though they used ladders to escape from their houses, their cruel husbands still stopped them. tolerating the obstructions caused by their own imperfection, these unfortunate gopis entered a deep state of meditation on Krishna. Such mental absorption brought them inconceivable good fortune. Seeing that they could not go to the forest with all their friends, they felt totally useless and burned with unbearable sorrow and separation from Krishna. This repentant mood exhausted their bad karmas and freed them from all material contamination. By fully surrendering to Krishna, they no longer felt the unhappiness caused by depending on their husbands and friends. As the materiality of their bodies diminished to nil, they experienced pralaya, devastation, or the final stage of developed emotions. Now that their karmic bonds were cut, they gave up their bodies made of the three qualities of material nature, just as a snake casts off its old skin. To attain the direct association of Krishna, who is sought throughout the Vedas, they received gorgeous spiritual bodies endowed with all auspicious attributes meant for serving the Lord. Immediately they joined the Nityasiddha gopis and blissfully approached Krishna. Thus they achieved Krishna's association without giving up their bodies or taking another birth. It is not surprising that those with strong desires for material enjoyment cannot attain liberation. Spiritual desires, however, are of a different nature. Though spiritual desires are indestructible, they have the power to completely destroy one's material qualities. By desiring to serve the Lord, the gopis received non-material bodies. Without following any other process, these gopis prove that attraction to Krishna is the greatest power in the universe. Seeing the approaching gopis, Krishna, the younger brother of Balaram, who embodies all arts, decided to bewilder them by acting deceptively. Dressed in shimmering yellow cloth, Krishna stood in an attractive threefold bending form on the bank of the Yamuna. Krishna spoke to discourage the gopis with his words while simultaneously encouraging them with the hidden meaning of his language. Noticing the joy and anticipation on their faces, Krishna said, "Please come. Welcome. All good fortune to you. What can I do for you? Why have you come here? Why don't you speak?" Seeing their worried countenances, he continued, "O lotus-eyed girls, you seem to be wandering about as if still trapped in your houses. If you say that you have come here out of curiosity, I cannot believe you because of your disarrayed clothing. It is not proper for women to look so odd in public. Your beautiful ornaments are all in the wrong places on your bodies. It seems you have decorated yourselves in a thoughtless way. O lotus-eyed girls, I am worried that your health is in great danger. By running here so hastily, you appear on the brink of exhaustion. The drops of perspiration hanging from your earrings seem like pearls. The artful designs on your foreheads have become smeared. Due to heavy breathing, your soft lips appear dried out and your bodices are heaving." Reading their minds, Krishna spoke more frankly. "Has something disastrous happened? If it had, your wanton actions would have made your husbands unhappy. How am I to tell whether your actions are beneficial or harmful? Did you half ornament your bodies for fun? Or is everything disarrayed due to your haste and longing to see me? Actually, it is not possible for someone trapped in a cave to suddenly come out independently. I doubt your husbands gave you permission to go to the forest. Maybe you gopis have come because of your desire to enjoy independently. But how could that be? Because this is not the proper time for pleasure. Just see, the inauspicious twilight is quickly approaching. The forest is full of dangerous beasts. I feel no fear, but this is no place for women to look for fun. It is certainly astonishing that you have fearlessly come here. Please listen to me. It will be better for you to immediately leave this place." There are inner meanings to the words Krishna speaks here to the gopis. These hidden meanings reveal Krishna's heartfelt intentions to enjoy with his eternal consorts. For example, in the previous section, Krishna means to say, "There is no cause to fear this forest. In Vrindavan there are no ferocious and dangerous animals. Whether I am alone or with others, this forest gives great pleasure. Since you have come to me, you should have no fear of this forest. Therefore, I recommend that you stay here with me." Krishna said, "O restless-eyed gopis, perhaps you have come here with a desire to see the forest flowers and smell their fragrance." Krishna really means, "Smelling the natural fragrance of your bodies has excited my attraction. Now I do not know what will happen by looking at you. Although you have seen the forest, you have not seen the creepers in detail. Now listen to me and understand all these things." Krishna said, "Look, it seems that the intoxicated bees humming within the flowering creepers are criticizing you like close friends. Therefore, you should not stay here but go back to your homes. With their smiling flowers, the trees are also hinting that you should go home." Here Krishna means to say, the bees are criticizing you for returning to your houses. Though you desire to leave this place, the trees are preventing you with their flower smiles. Krishna said, "Look, the rays of light passing through the leaves of the trees and mixing with the shade at their bases look so picturesque. The birds, mistaking them for sesame seeds, are pecking at those spots of light. Oh, look there! Vrindavan is fragrant with sandalwood trees and filled with the drawn-out sounds of cuckoos. The gentle wind carries the sweet scent of blue lotuses picked up from embracing the waves of the Yamuna. Though the deep forest is very attractive on account of its variety of trees and songbirds, it is not proper for women to come here alone in the dead of night to see them. You should accept my words, go serve your husbands and respect your in-laws. Therefore, go back to Braja." Krishna intends to say, "It is good that you have come here to see the forest. Now just stay here with me and do not go back to Braja." After speaking to the married ladies, Krishna addressed the unmarried gopis. "O young girls with beautiful smiles, please hear me. The helpless babies and the young boys and girls are crying at home. Go feed them, milk the cows, and let the calves drink their fill. Do not let your broad intelligence fall into illusion." The inner meaning here is, do not feed the children or milk the cows, and do not have doubts about my fulfilling all your cherished desires. Then Krishna spoke to all the gopis. "Your mothers, fathers, brothers, and husbands are looking for you everywhere. Therefore, you must return home. Do not pretend to be ignorant by saying, 'We do not know anything.'" Krishna is really saying, you should not fall into illusion and forget your desired goal. Please stay here and realize all your desires. Krishna continued speaking, "Please go. Do not stand here any longer. O lotus-eyed gopis, I do not know why you are not moving from this forest. Why did you come here in the first place? If you intended to see me, then it has already been fulfilled. You could see me at any time. It is not right that chaste women like yourselves see me like this." Here Krishna intends to say, "Do not leave my forest grove, but stay here a long time. O lotus-eyed gopis, if you ask the reason for your coming here, then I will tell you. You think I do not know your motives? I know everything. Just by seeing you, I am not satisfied, so we must engage in more confidential affairs. If a person comes to you out of attraction, it is wrong to ask him to leave." Krishna said, "Direct association with me does not give as much pleasure as meditating upon me, hearing about me, and seeing my deity form. Therefore, you should go home. O lotus-eyed gopis, it is not proper for persons such as you to steal love from someone like me." The inner meaning here is, direct association with me is far superior to meditating upon me, hearing about me, or seeing my deity form. Therefore, do not go. O lotus-eyed girls, just stay with me and plunder my love. Krishna spoke again. O all attractive gopis, you should not renounce your service to your husbands. You are all following the path of morality. Women who love their husbands should not act like persons addicted to sin. The inner meaning is, the service you are giving to your husband should be rendered to me. Now that I have seen you, I have lost interest in anything else. Since you desire me only and not your husbands, You should not reject me. Krishna spoke, An intelligent woman should never reject her husband, even if he is full of faults, misbehaved, deaf, dumb, diseased, penniless, or like a vine dropping all of its flowers and about to die. What to speak of a husband who is faultless? Certainly he can never be given up. This is the law of the Vedas and the common tradition. Your pure character is imbued with these two norms of conduct, yet you stand here fearlessly. Attraction to a man other than one's husband is always dangerous. It is contrary to both norms. Besides bringing defamation, it is condemned especially for persons like you. Inner meaning, since you are adhering to both standards on this extraordinary night, you are safe and should stay here with me. The attraction you have for me will give peace of mind and deliver you from all fear. You will not be criticized at all because you are not acting against any principles. Krishna spoke again. A proper wife has only one husband and should not even look at another man. Chaste women do not do what you are doing now. Respecting my words, you should accept this beneficial instruction and immediately leave this forest. Inner meaning, ordinary women cannot even see me, the best of husbands. What to speak of touching me? Nothing in the universe can compare with your good fortune. Now follow my instructions and do not go home. In this way, Krishna, the full moon of all 64 arts, stood beautifully bedecked with a garland as he tested the gopis' love with his clever riddles. His outer remarks directly opposed his inner motives. Krishna's speaking resembled the autumn season, where one gets relief from the hot sun by entering the cool water of a deep lake. Krishna's behavior resembled a jackfruit, which is externally rough and prickly but sweet inside, or like a juicy coconut with a hard shell. Knowing his nature, one should not give up thinking that he is too difficult to attain. The intelligent and determined person can easily penetrate his hard shell and taste the delicious interior. Krishna resembles a banana flower that is soft and sweet within, but hard on the outside. Fearing the hard skin, one should not abandon the honey nectar within. One should bear whatever hardships come from external causes. Just like a shashkuli pishtaka sweetmeat, Krishna concealed his soft interior with a rough exterior. Whether for testing or joking, such instructions are always perfect when coming from the master of comedy. Through the special usage of words, Krishna conveyed his inner attraction and attachment to the gopis with external expressions such as, "Welcome, welcome. It is wrong to be attracted to other men, and you should go." Krishna spoke in a tricky way with the gopis in order to solve a difficult problem. He wanted to create unity among the opposing parties of Radha and Chandravali so that everyone could fully taste the rasa. Superficially, he seemed indifferent, but within, he relished the essence of sweetness. Blinded by their attachment, the gopis only took the outer meaning. They could not perceive the hidden reality of his words. As their prospects for pleasure dried up, the gopis' suffering reached intolerable proportions. On hearing Krishna's disheartening words, the gopis felt as if they were stabbed by a million swords, stung by scorpions, bitten by black snakes, burnt by raging fires, cut by lethal razors, afflicted by high fevers, pierced by spears, or poisoned in every limb of their bodies. The whole planet seemed empty, the three worlds hopeless, the universe devoid of bliss, the directions burned with pain, and the earth was a tasteless pile of ashes. They felt like they were dying a slow death. In those difficult moments, they lost consciousness and appeared like dolls made only of hard bones. Within a few minutes, they recovered from fainting with the help of the goddess of consciousness. But due to the emotions swirling in their hearts, they were hurled into an even more extreme state of suffering. Tears streamed from their eyes, their faces faded, their lips trembled, and drops of perspiration formed on their cheeks. They breathed erratically, their limbs hung limply, and their beautiful armlets slipped off their arms. The gopis felt ashamed of their love, since they did not give up their lives after hearing their lover's indifferent words. Having accepted Krishna as their one and only shelter, they now wanted to enter the lowest planet out of shame. They drew lines on the ground with the toes of their lotus feet that shine like brilliant five-pronged engraving instruments. The life airs of the gopis, which were already fragile by nature, were now broken to pieces by the acts of Krishna's harsh words. Although immensely disturbed, their life airs could not escape because vapor blocked their throats. As this vapor condensed, it poured from their eyes as tears. Dead silent, the gopis looked like figures painted on the canvas of the sky. The halahala poison of suffering, incapable of being contained within the gopis' throats, dripped out of the doors of their eyes as tears mixed with their cudgel. Astonishingly, those tears disappeared when they fell upon their tortured breasts. Did those tears enter their hearts that were previously poisoned by the loss of their life airs? The hot breath rushing out of their noses wilted their flower garlands and the delicate flower petals of their lips. Tears stained black with cudgel, and looking like juice squeezed from the essence of beauty, fell incessantly from the lotus faces of the grief-stricken gopis. Somehow, this did not discolor their nose pearls. Although their nose pearls resembled drops of liquid beauty, they did not fall like their tears. Like seeds, they waited to produce the fruits of prema ras. Eager to reveal their individual emotional moods of pride or submission and to transform the anxiety of love, the gopis replied to Krishna. Like the sweet humming of bees, mad to taste the honey of his face, the gopis tried repeatedly to convey their exact desires. Filling the darkness with the sparkle of their blackened tears, some submissive gopi group leaders, such as Bhadra, spoke, quietly conveying their sadness. Padma and other submissive leaders, who have rows of radiantly white bud-like teeth, darkened the night with their half-closed eyes that seemed like blind bees supported by the fragrance of their faces. They spoke impudently to Krishna. Some bold sakis like Vishakha spoke sweet words with ornamental intonation. Her words, saturated with intense attraction, escaped the comprehension of Saraswati. Creating a forest of blue lotus flowers in the sky with their furtive glances and clusters of golden lotuses with their forms, some bold leaders like Radhika spoke with ferocious anger. Overcome with pride and possessiveness, Radhika, Lalita, and Shyam, their eyes reddened and their faces sprinkled with hot drops of perspiration, spoke to Madhava in an angry mood. The beautiful Chandravali and other submissive sakis hesitatingly divulged their strong desires in soft voices full of entreaty. Their breasts moistened with blackened tears, some of the Braja Kumaris, like Danya Saki, spoke in choked voices due to their infatuation and uncontrollable attraction for Krishna.